You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. From a band kid growing up in Florida to a fearsome offensive tackle who played 18 seasons in the NFL, including 11 years as a Detroit Lion, Lomas Brown has quite a story to tell. He was named to the Pro Bowl for seven straight seasons, and he got that Super Bowl ring when he was with Tampa Bay. Lomas first came to Michigan when he was drafted by the Lions. That was in 1985. And he's still here, despite the snow and the cold winters. His new memoir, co-authored with Mike Eisenberg, is titled If These Walls Could Talk, Stories from the Detroit Lions Sideline, Locker Room, and Press Box. And he is here with us now. Lomas, I want to start at your very beginning. Who pointed you to football?
Well, you know, it was my principal. It was a principal. He's not here with us any longer. His name was Alex Bromier. And a funny story. What happened was the first day of school, I went in and signed up for classes. I'm coming out the auditorium. Someone says, hey, I turn around and it's the principal. I didn't know that at the moment, but he called me over to him and he asked me, did you sign up for varsity sports? And I was like, no, what is varsity sports? So he just grabbed me by the arm and took me back in there and he signed me up for it. So I had to wait till the end of the day. It was the last class. And come to find out it was football that he signed me up for. So I'm like, wow. It was just him. It was his. He was the reason why I started football. And
amazing.
I thank that man every time I would see him. Because if not for him, I know no telling where I would have been at.
You know what? What a real testament to the power of the right word from the right teacher at the right time.
That's right.
Something else. So we're going to roll ahead a few years. You discover you'd been drafted by Detroit. What'd you know about Detroit? What were your thoughts?
You know, nothing. I knew it was cold. I knew y'all made automobiles up here. And at that part, at that time, I hate to say it, it was like the Myrtle Capital, you know.
80s were rough.
Yeah, it was rough up here. So I didn't have any idea what I was stepping into. But I knew, you know, it was a team that had only won four games the year before. So the team wasn't doing well. So it just seemed like, you know, it was going to be a challenge, and especially for me growing up down south my whole life, you know, having to get acclimated to the climate up here. You know, just everything was so different up here. Everything moved faster up here. You know, I was down in Miami, you know, you had it was a mixing bowl. So it was just so different from my upbringing, how I was brought up. But I was happy that I got the contrast because I got to see how the Midwest live, and I loved it. I loved it, and I still love it today.
And you're still here
today.
That's
right.
Your book has so many inside stories and views of people you've encountered while you were aligned. So let's do a pop quiz and get your quick views on some of these folks.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Sanders.
Okay, everybody say I'm biased. The best running back I've ever seen play and the best running back that I've ever played with. And just the best person, just humble. You know, I blocked for Barry for 7 of his 10 years and never once. And, you know, Barry took a lot of losses and everything. He took a lot of losses. I never once heard him get up, point his fingers, or say anything bad to the players or to an offensive lineman. And that's a testimony to him because I've been around running backs. I've been around people that have really not been good people. But him, he's just been an excellent person. And that's why we would do any and everything we could to make sure that guy succeeded because he was just that type of person.
Were you surprised when he walked away?
I wasn't surprised when he walked away. I really wasn't. I think a lot of people thought he was coming back. I knew he wasn't going to come back because I knew how Barry was. Barry's a person of his conviction. Barry, once he walks away, once he set his mind to something, that's it. He's not going to come back. I knew he wasn't coming back. I knew the game of football had played this path with him. And I'm going to tell you one thing, Cindy, that really was telling to me is when I went to his Hall of Fame induction. And he said there at this Hall of Fame, he said, I didn't choose football. Football chose me. And for this guy to give 10 years, 10 of the best years that the Lions fans have probably ever seen out of one player and do that and really, you know, he didn't choose football. You know, football chose him, but to play at that level, that gave me so much more respect for him to put his body in harm's way for 10 years. And he was able to walk away on top, and that's what I'm happy about for Barry.
Someone who has been in this studio through his work at the U of M Anti-Depression Center. trainer, Eric Hipple. Yes. What do you want to say about Eric Hipple?
You know, that and another great guy. I came in, he was already here. Mm-hmm. And it was funny, at that time in 1985, $500,000 was a lot. And that's what Eric was making. And we used to walk by his locker, me and Kevin Glover, and used to look at his locker and be like, wow, this guy makes $500,000. It was just such a big number to us back in the day. And now, compared to now, that's just a drop in the hat. But another guy that went through a lot, persevered. That's that. When I think about Eric, perseverance is the word that really comes to mind with him. With all the stuff he went through with it, losing his son, which is something I just couldn't imagine, losing a child. But losing his son, then what he went through.
With his own depression battle.
Depression, and you know how he's come through it. And now he's the kind of the guiding light to help other guys, not just in the league, but guys in the Army, in our armed services.
Students.
And he's touching people all over, not just in the state of Michigan. And I couldn't have been proud of Eric for how things have really turned around for him.
Scott Mitchell.
You know what, Cindy, you know, with me and Scott, we've talked maybe twice since everything with the ESPN thing and everything. And we've talked. And the thing I say about Scott, you know what I would say with him? I would say, use the word victim with him. And the reason why I would use the word victim with him is because we were a locker room. If you think about it, in 1991, we had got to the championship game. One game from the Super Bowl, getting there. You know, we had a lot of tragedies and injuries that kind of hurt the team the following years, that kind of had us going up and down. When they brought Scott in, they dropped Scott in the locker room full of guys ready to win. I don't think the organization equipped Scott the right way to come in there, meaning I don't think they told Scott the type of locker room he was coming into, the type of environment he was coming to, where he was coming into a locker room full of hungry guys. We were hungry. We were ready to win. We were on the cusp.
Fans were hungry.
Absolutely. Yeah. They've been hungry. We were looking at the Dallas Cowboys, and if you think about it, we had beat them in 91, beat them down, and our team was similar to their team. The only thing we needed was a quarterback. They had the great receiver. We had Herman Moore. We had Barry Sanders. They had Emmitt Smith. They had Troy Aikman. We needed our Troy Aikman to get us over the hump. And I think when they brought Scott in, they didn't let him know how it was, how hungry we were, how ready this team was. And I just don't think his attitude, I just don't think his hunger and desire was the same as ours in that locker room. And that was a complete conflict. That conflicted us. And anytime you're a leader, the leader of your team isn't on the same page with the rest of the guys, it's not going to work. And you know, we had a couple of good years with Scott, but I just think things could have been a lot better. And when I talked to Scott years later, he told me he was going through a lot of personal things, which we didn't know. And again, if he'd have known the type of locker room he was in, he would have known that he could have came to us guys and told us, because everybody was going through stuff. I went through a divorce while I was with the Lions. Everybody goes through things, but that's what your teammates are there for, to hold you up, to help you go through those tough times. But your teammates have to know. And I just think, you know, through him not knowing us, through us not knowing him, that just never worked out that way.
There are a lot of insights, and it's interesting that he is one of the folks who does contribute to your book with some quotes, so that's worth it. You were right there the day Mike Utley suffered that hit that left him paralyzed. What do you remember about that moment?
You know what? The thing I remember the most is, and I was hurt, Cindy, so I had hurt my shoulder. I think I got hurt the game before against Tampa Bay. So I was on the sideline. And when Mike went down, you know, he was down for a while. And I just remember, you know, I was just standing on the sideline, you know, just watching. But then it started taking a little longer than normal. And I didn't really get tipped off until I seen Kevin Glover walking off the field. And it looked like he was crying. And when I seen that, that's when it really hit me that something was really, really wrong with Mike. And then, of course, you know, them putting him on the stretcher. Yeah. And then, of course, the iconic him giving us the thumbs up, going off the field. It was just so, you know, football brings you a lot of things. And, you know, of course, losing is one of the things, and you never like to lose a game. But when you lose a teammate, when you lose a brother, when you lose a friend, you know, like that, and lose him the way we lost Mike, you know, it still resonates to this day. He's one of my best friends. I talk to him frequently. Matter of fact, he was just up here 2 weeks ago. Me, him, his wife, and my wife went to have lunch along with Tim Pendel and some other people. And it was just great seeing him. And know what, Cindy? He still says he's going to walk. He said that the day we went to visit him in the hospital room after his accident. And here it is, I don't know how many years, 20-some-odd years later, he still said he's going to walk. And that's the type of person he is.
I'm talking with Lomas Brown about his memoir, If These Walls Could Talk, stories from the Detroit Lions sideline, locker room, and press box. And here we are as we talk. The Lions are in first place in their division. You know better than anybody how the team and their fans have had their ups and downs. What do you think? Could this team do what you and your teammates did in 91 again?
You know what? The sky's the limit. All the opportunities are in front of them. And that's that. Anytime you get an opportunity, you know, I mean, and they have it. They just need to take advantage of it. If you think about it, you know, they beat Minnesota twice this year, so they have the head-to-head against them. They got Green Bay, Chicago. They come here. So you got all the rest of your divisional games pretty much at home. So they have the opportunity, and that's 7-4 right now. If you think about it, if you take care of your home field, which would be, I think it's 2 or 3 more games, that'll put you at 9-10 wins, which should get you in. So they're coming together at the right time. They're getting healthy, which is important because a lot of teams get banged up during this time of the year. It seemed like we're getting all our people back at this time of the year, which is a great time to be healthy. They feel confident about yourself. And I know, you know, because that's how we used to feel. Right.
Exactly. In the head, right?
Exactly right. Because you go out there knowing you're going to win the game. That's important to go out on the field knowing you're going to win. Now, you don't know how much you're going to win the game. But you don't know how the game is going to go.
And it might be in the last moment.
Like it has been all year long for us.
Yep, coming from behind.
They're going out there with the concept that, hey, we know we could beat this team. Now we just got to go out and execute.
Lomas, what is it like when things are going badly and, you know, you go out there and the losing streak is just, it stinks the place up. You have fans sitting there with bags over there.
Yes.
How much does that hit you players?
Oh, it hits. And that's a great question, Cindy, because I don't think how people think it affects the players, but
you care.
Oh, you have to. This is your profession. This is your profession. You have to care. And you think about it, you got guys coming up every year at the college ranks. You got guys from other teams coming in that can take your job. So it's super, super competitive. So when you lose, you should feel it like that. I remember we used to wouldn't go eat. Man, your food didn't taste well. You know, you treated your family a little differently than you would because you're upset about things.
People probably giving you a little lip when you're out. I saw that happen. I can't think who it was at a Starbucks.
Yep.
And I was behind him in line. And people were like, well, thanks a lot.
See? It happens. I mean, it happens. I remember once back in, this probably had to be 93 or so, I had got hurt bad ankle sprain. I missed like 4 weeks. But I was supposed to miss 6 weeks. And I tried to come back earlier and got re-injured in the game. And I remember my wife, she was in the stands, and she was telling me some of the stuff, you know, that was being said, you know, about me, you know, from the fans. But again, you know, you invest so much. The fans, they invest so much. Their hard-earned money and their time, you know, with the players, they invest so much. Their time and everything, their bodies. And when things don't go right, there's a high level of frustration, not just for the fans, but for the players, the coaches, everybody. Just nothing is right when you're on a losing streak or things don't go well over there. Just nothing is right. So it's all always, they say winning cures all. That's the truth.
You know, after you left the Lions, you played in Arizona, Cleveland, New York, finally Tampa Bay, mm-hmm. Super Bowl 37. What told you it was time to call it a career?
Well, when I was with the Cleveland Browns, I signed a 3-year deal with Cleveland. That was the first team that ever cut me, ever cut me. You know, out of my years, they just said, they just cut me and stuff. And it hurt me. It was probably one of the lowest points, other than losing the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. that I had. And I remember driving back to Detroit, and I remember Jim Fossil from the New York Giants, coach calling me. And he was calling me saying, hey, I want you to come out to New York and come see us and everything. And I'm telling Coach, no. I think I'm going to retire. I was in my 15th year. I'm 30-some years old. I think I'm going to retire. And I remember him telling me, just come. Just come out and see it. Went out and seen it. And that the rest was history. I never turned back. That was the first Super Bowl I had ever got to. If I wouldn't have signed with them, I would have never got to my first Super Bowl, even though I ended up losing it. Yeah. And it's just the same way with Tampa Bay. I was signed with Tampa Bay a day before they went to training camp. Wasn't sure I was going to sign with them, but I remember it was the hottest year. That's when Corey Stringer had died that year, and there was a big thing with hydrating players and watching the temperature. And I remember down in Tampa, it was brutal. Oh, my goodness.
You'd acclimated to this Michigan weather. Oh,
that's right.
Florida
I sure
kid.
Was. And I was older, and it was brutal. And I remember calling my mother and telling her, I think I'm going to retire. I think this is it. You know, I don't know if I should be out here doing this. And she talked me into staying. And I stayed, and I say that to say if I wouldn't have stayed, I would have never got my Super Bowl ring. So when I knew at that point, once I got my Super Bowl ring, it was time for me to go. I had put in my 18 years. I had been blessed to get it in my last year. My body was physically wearing down. The guys were getting bigger and stronger and faster. You know, the game was moving a lot faster. So you kind of know when all these things come into effect, you start knowing that it's coming to an end. And I'm glad I was able to get my ring, because it probably, if it wasn't for that, I probably would have tried to hang on a few more years to try to get it, and then no telling how it would have ended up. So I'm glad I was able to go out on top getting the ring.
And on that high note, Lomas Brown, number 75. His memoir with Mike Eisenberg is titled If These Walls Could Talk, Stories from the Detroit Lions Sideline, Locker Room, and Press Box. Such a pleasure, Lomas. Thank you so much.
Thank you.